Well, it's census time in Canada again. For pollsters like me, the census is an irreplaceable tool used every day in our work. We use it to make sure our survey samples are representative of the population. We use it to help model data, and it helps us tell the story of changing demographics and behaviors in Canada. Last week, I lucked out and was invited to complete the long-form version of this year's census. It was 20 minutes of pure enjoyment. I know, I need to get a life. Welcome back to In Focus with David Coletto. I'm David Coletto. My guest on this episode of In Focus is Canada's chief statistician, Anil Arora. Mr. Arora was appointed the head of Statistics Canada in September 2016. Now, on the deadline to complete the 2021 census, we talked about the importance of the census itself, how decisions about what is asked are made, and how the way data is collected is changing. We also dig into what Stats Canada has done over the pandemic and its plan to improve how it captures data on race, gender, and sexual orientation. I was thrilled Anil agreed to talk with me today. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. We're recording this the day before Census Day, which is the day that Canadians have to complete the census. So given how busy you probably are, I really appreciate your time. So great to see you.
Thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So I want to, first of all, let me say, as a market researcher, public opinion researcher, you know, census data is as important as it gets to my work. And that's true with a lot of the work that Statistics Canada does. So before we get into the census specifically, maybe give our listeners a sense of what role Statistics Canada plays, in your view, as the head of the organization in the economic, social, and policy life of the country.
Well, you know, when you kind of think about it a bit, you know, you look at how much of our society is driven by data and information and knowledge today. We have a very complex system when you think about, you know, decisions that we make directly for ourselves or our loved ones, or, you know, the government makes about us. And you wonder, well, what basis is that made? Or even just things that we kind of take for granted, right? I mean, we're an aging population. Immigration is sort of the thing that fuels us and the economy and our society and so on. You know, how do we know that? Well, you know, it comes because we're collecting information that helps us understand our society, our economy, and more the environment, and even more so, the interrelationships between these aspects that influence us directly or indirectly. So Statistics Canada, from the time that you either hit the snooze button in the morning or, you know, listen to the news, you know, we do give or take, you know, 1500 releases a year. Chances are you're listening to something, you know, whether it's the inflation rate, whether it's the unemployment rate, whether it's, you know, the latest population figure, whether it's, you know, what's happening in terms of mental health, how students are doing, what the income might be and what the distribution might look like. All those things that, you know, we kind of tuck away in the background come from this agency, this national treasure in a sense. And so one is it informs us, but even more so, this agency actually plays a very active and crucial role in the functioning of our democratic system. So the number of seats in the House of Commons that, you know, represent us, you know, comes from the census as the base, the redistribution of HST back to, you know, provinces for their fair share. Guess what? That's statistically generated by us. The equalization and transfer payments of billions of dollars that go back and forth are based on information that you know, we put out. So we're an active player. And I think as Canadians, we want to make sure that the data that we're putting out is used responsibly. And it's used, you know, to better our society and our economy. So there isn't a time during that day, from the time, as I say, you wake up to the time you go to bed, that you aren't being influenced by what we do.
And it's so true, right? You hear, I wake up to the radio and it's inevitably one of the top stories a few times a week is some data that your agency's collected that is helping understand the world. And, you know, our tagline at Abacus Data is, you know, good decisions require good data. And I think that's you don't have a tagline at Stats Canada, but if you did, I would say that's your mission too, is to deliver good data to government, to civil society, to businesses, to all aspects of Canadian life, so we can make better decisions that improve outcomes, improve the quality of life at the end of the day.
Well, our tagline is data to insights for a better Canada. So
there you go.
A lot of alignment there for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I also, I always, when I have conversations with clients or stakeholders or others who are just interested in the work that I do, it often comes up how important trust is in my business, because when I put out a release, right, people instinctively have to trust that I actually went out and collected that data, that I spoke to 1,000 Canadians, that I did the survey I said I would do. Can you speak to me about how important keeping trust levels high is from your perspective, both in terms of Statistics Canada's role in ensuring the validity and quality of the work that you're doing, but also in the relationships that you build with those that rely on your data?
It's crucial in one word. Trust is the currency that we use, where, you know, we don't sell things back to Canadians. We don't, our sole purpose is to understand our society, our economy, our environment, and the interrelationships between them better, and to provide everybody, all Canadians, whether they be a minister in a provincial government, a councillor in a municipal government, or whether it's the business down the road, the kind of information that they need to make us better. So trust is everything. And that's why this institution's existed over 100 years. It's got a very, very strong legal framework that compels us. It's the law to protect the confidentiality and the privacy of the information that we have. We will never have, put out anything individual about a company or a citizen. So that trust is not just trust me, mm-hmm. but it's actually encoded in law. And so, when somebody has to fill out a mandatory questionnaire, the quid pro quo to that is that they'll never see their individual information unless they consent to it or allow us to be able to divulge that. They'll never see it ever outside of our agency. And it's a culture. You ask anybody at Statistics Canada, that joins us from day one that they join us, that's the first thing that they get. They understand it in the first 10 minutes. They're working in this organization where trust is everything, and they have a responsibility to uphold that trust. Now, we did from time to time, we do polls, commission them independently. And so the last one we did was just before the pandemic. And we found that I think 88% of Canadians said that they trusted this agency. So that's worth a lot when you think about, how we can go about ensuring that we provide that baseline. So when you say you do 1,000, surveys, the labor force survey, for example, is 110,000 individuals a month. The reason, and the census, of course, is, 38 million Canadians that participate in this exercise. You need that baseline to be able to weight up those responses. So we are part of that ecosystem that Canadians trust us with their information, either get it directly or, through others that have that information through administrative sources. So trust is absolutely vital, and we never take it for granted. We know that each and every transaction, every single day, we have to, start from zero and build it right up so that every Canadian, every business can ensure that they keep that trust in us.
Well, let's talk about the thing that I'm sure is on most of your colleagues' plates and minds. We're recording this the day before Census Day. It's going to be released on Census Day, May 11th. So happy Census Day to you and your colleagues. Every 5 years, Statistics Canada is mandated to count Canadians, right? And collect a lot more than just how many of us there are, but profile who we are, where we live, and every year you ask a number of different questions. It's probably, I'm going to guess, the most complex, largest, and probably most important exercise you do as an agency. So I think we've talked a little bit why it's so important, but maybe you could just give us a sense of from interactions you've had with others who use this data, why is this census so key?
Well, first of all, thank you and happy Census Day back to you and to all Canadians, as a matter of fact, because it's the one day that we take a picture and, you know, you want to be in this picture. This is what makes us, you know, Canadians, and this is what makes us Canada. And, you know, it is not only the biggest exercise that we do at Statistics Canada, but it's the largest peacetime undertaking that the country takes. Logistically, just think about, you know, going to every single dwelling, institution, you know, homeless shelter, you name it, and to make sure that every single Canadian, everybody in Canada, as of the reference day, which is May the 11th, is part of this portrait. As you said, yes, the basic, I mean, go back to sort of, you know, even sort of biblical times, you know, the idea is to, you know, get a good count of the population and then the characteristics of the population as expressed by the public on that particular day. So, you know, it's important to make sure that everybody has the opportunity to count themselves in, but we continue our efforts, of course, to make sure that we receive completed questionnaires from every single, you know, dwelling long after tomorrow. So we keep going with our efforts into, you know, June and even July to make sure that, you know, everybody has the opportunity to count themselves in. And we've got a pretty good, again, track record in the 2016 census. We know because we have post-census surveys that actually do a check on us. They kind of give us a report card of, you know, who all we missed and how many we may have counted twice. So there's this undercoverage and overcoverage study that we do, not just important in terms of giving us a report card, but it also actually goes into adjust those counts later on for the, you know, billions of dollars that are at stake every year. So, and that's just one purpose of collecting the information so that we have good counts on which, you know, monies are transferred, if you like, between governments, because the system depends on this. But as you yourself said, you know, by the way, 98.4%, that was the number from the last census. So we come awfully close. And then, of course, we adjust because we know the 1.4% that we missed, we adjust for that as well. So that's how you get to a census, which is 100%, right? This is how we got to get to that. So we account for every dwelling, every vacant dwelling, every single area. And that's why we need 30,000 people that do the follow-up effort. So it's a fairly logistically a complex exercise, but there's a lot riding on the accuracy of the numbers. And then, as you said, it goes well beyond the headcounts. And so we get into demographics, of course. We get to talking about that aging population. We get to, as you yourself experienced it, you know, as you mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, you were one of four households randomly selected to do the long form. And so, by the way, we've never had so many people say, I wish I'd received the long form. So you're lucky, by the way.
And I felt like I won the lottery, a little mini lottery, especially for like a researcher like me. It's like, I thought it was the short form, by the way, because so engaged. It was like, it's only 20 minutes. This is like nothing. And everyone online told me, no, David, I think you did the long form because you got questions I didn't get. And I was like,
yeah. Okay. The short form has essentially very, you know, very simple handful of questions, which just get at, you know, name, age, you know, sex, gender, some language questions. There's a question on veterans, people who've served and are serving. And then essentially it takes about 5 minutes if you do it online. It's got skips and patterns in it for a you know, a family. The long form takes about, generally, about, I would say about a half an hour online. You can also listen to some tunes that we put on Spotify while you do it if you want.
Got a soundtrack for census taking.
Absolutely. You know, so before you know it, you know, four or five songs and you're done, you know, kind of thing. And so yeah, we want to make it an enjoyable thing. Some have taken this opportunity to get their families together and get everybody to participate and made a, you know, bit of a celebration out of it to also instruct and talk about the importance of this data. And of course, as you experience yourself, the long form gets into a lot more characteristics about, you know, whether it's your household characteristics, but also dwellings, immigration status, your ethnicity, the labor market situation. And just think about it. I mean, what we are going through right now is a moment in history. And we will have the data that tells us what was happening at this time, not just in averages, but what was happening at neighborhood levels, what was happening at community levels, what was happening in all those domains. So it is a, it's a nurturing, if you like, of, you know, information about ourselves that we will use for decades to come. So we will say, you know, where were we prior to this census? What were those trends? Where were we during? And where are we afterwards? So this is not only a celebration and an exercise, but, you know, every single decision that you think about, you know, how kids are going to do because they've gone through this period, what are their, you know, outcomes going to be, whether it's unions and homeownership or whether their participation in, you know, labor. I mean, the future generation will look at this just as much as our generation.
It's so interesting because only until now did I just realize, as unfortunate as we all are to have lived this past 14 months with the pandemic, from a research perspective, the timing couldn't have been better to do this census, right? Because, you know, probably more research has been done over the last 14 years to try to understand the impact that this pandemic is having on people. But the census is the best way to do it because everybody's going to be counted and you're going to be able to see, as you said, right down to the neighborhood level, what's happening and what the impact has been. And, you know, whether it's where we're working or what our household expenses are, so we can figure all that kind of stuff out. I'm speechless. You can see, like, I think it's just such an important moment.
It's a microscope, right? During something, a live reaction for those scientists amongst us. You know, when else would you want to observe these things in place? And secondly, you know, learning from these experiences is so crucial to saying, how do we do better the next time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this collection of data during this time is absolutely vital. And so that's why I say Canadians, and you know, we're very, you know, arguably the best educated, you know, in the world, according to the OECD stats and, you know, our own surveys. People understand the value of data. People understand the value of good information, and they want decision makers to be guided by what's actually happening. And I think Canadians know that they have to give a little, like they, you know, the 5 minutes or the 20 minutes or the half an hour, you know, once in 5 years, it's a reasonable, imposition. And as you said, timing wise, this is the time to contribute. So we all believe in this. We all believe that these are data given to a trusted source that's going to keep it confidential and private, and it's going to be used for public good, and it's going to have a huge impact on decisions that are made by us, about us, and for us.
I've got one more question on the census before we move to something else, and that's maybe take us inside the laboratory a little bit on how you decide collectively what questions to ask. And I don't mean the exact wording, but why decide to ask, for example, about in the long form census, expenses that households are incurring for electricity or gas or other kinds of things? Like how does the process work? I don't need to know. I understand why you probably chose those items, but I'm sure there are hundreds of questions that people might bring to the table. How do you decide what can fit on a half an hour survey, particularly the long form?
Yeah, look, I think you said it and you teed it up, right? The demands are honestly limitless. to add more and more content, because the questions, you know, never stop coming. And that's a good thing, right? A society that's thirsting for more knowledge. And of course, we have real constraints, right? I mean, you know, we're mindful of the burden that, you know, Canadians are busy. This is not the only thing they're thinking about. They understand that we're doing the best that we can to make sure that we're not imposing unnecessary demands on their precious time. So, you know, that's why we have the sampling, right? So that's why 3/4 of Canadian households will only receive a questionnaire that's about, you know, 5 minutes long. Do it online, right. You're done. You know, a quarter will donate, in a sense, their records, you know, to get a better understanding of how the rest of Canada is doing. So we have to balance cost, we have to balance time, we have to balance burden, we have to balance, you know, a number of demands. Now, so, you know, just because, you know, there's a need, it doesn't mean that it's going to test well and it's going to be, you know, accepted by all Canadians. So there's a you know, a whole process whereby we actually start off with a bit of a blank slate. We know that there are trends and things that we have to nurture, you know, over time in a consistent way. And so we have to have, you know, definitions that, yeah, that carry through from one census to the next, because you don't want to be having the basis on which you compare completely different from one census to the next, because then you go, well, that was collected with this definition, this collect, so we can't.
Census is the ultimate tracking study.
Right. So there's this pressure to keep things stable and consistent, and then there's this pressure to add, right? So we're always balancing those two forces. And so we started off with a very extensive set of consultations. In fact, for the 2021 census, we have never had as much demand. So we did it, you know, we went out and listened to people, you know, through every mechanism you can think of, from focus groups to surveys to, you know, online sessions, engagement sessions, round tables, you name it. We consulted, you think of the group, we pretty well, you know, asked them, you know, what are their priorities and what do they need? And then, of course, as I said, we take that information and then we put it through the lens of, okay, prioritization, you know, what can fit on the questionnaire, what's going to be acceptable and so on. And then we actually do tests. We do both a qualitative test, which is with, again, tens of thousands. And then we do 130,000 household test, quantitative test. Right. So, and then we have different versions of the questionnaire. Some work out, some fail. So even though we may want to try something, but it just doesn't, you know, Canadians won't, you know, aren't quite ready yet, or it doesn't, you know, we didn't ask the question right, or whatever have you. So there's a vetting that happens. And then ultimately what we do is we take the questionnaire to cabinet, and it's cabinet that decides on, you know, what are the most pressing needs the country has. And then it's gazetted. It's actually gazetted. The questionnaire is gazetted and it's put into law. And then we get the mandate to say, okay, go ahead, you know, use your methodology, use how it is that it should be collected to get at that information. And you won't, like, the number of people that are lined up now to get those results, to get into, you know, as you said, you know, why do you ask on electricity? Why do you ask on, you know, what are the household expenses? Well, guess what? You know, when you go for a mortgage, and they look at, you know, what is the amount that you're spending on, you know, households, you know, what does it take to run your household? What percentage is that going to be as shelter costs? You know, well, it may very well make a difference between, you know, who's over leveraged and who's under leveraged. So, you know, and that's just one. I mean, we're not talking, you know, what is the market basket measure upon which we then, you know, assess poverty rates, or, you know, what are inputs to our expenditures that go into calculating the inflation or this, you know, consumer price index. You can be assured that every single question in the questionnaire has a purpose. It either is satisfying a legal requirement or a policy requirement, because we know that, in a sense, the real estate on that questionnaire is so, so precious. So we don't ask questions just for interest sake. They actually have to have a real need. They have to be tested well, they have to be accepted by Canadians, and then they have to be put into law, because it is a mandatory requirement.
Okay, I got one more question on the census. When do you expect the first release to come out?
The first release, believe it or not, we don't wait till we've tabulated the billions of records. The first release will come out in January, that quickly, and it'll be the sort of the basic you know, population numbers. And then over the course of the summer, then we come out with more detailed variables. And then in the winter, we come out with, you know, the rich tabulations that, you know, everybody's used to seeing.
Can't wait. Can't wait. Okay. We spoke about the pandemic and the census being conducted in it. I know also that Statistics Canada, you know, when confronted with this crisis, has unique tools to help us understand what's going on, whether it's at the individual household level, from a business perspective, from charities. Just give me an example, a sort of a survey, as if you will, of the kinds of things that Statistics Canada has been doing over the pandemic that it wouldn't normally have done, right? What's new? What's innovative? Because I do work in a lot of different fields, and as much as, again, the pandemic has created misery and real heartache for a lot of people, it's forced us to be quite innovative. And so what are some of the things that the agency's done that is new? And I'll add on, you think you're going to continue to do because it's demonstrated value in terms of understanding the country.
Well, you know, our journey starts about 3 and a bit years ago when we made a very conscious decision to modernize the agency, because we could see these trends of needing more detailed data, more timely data. And frankly, we, you know, in a society that's looking and yearning for more information and knowledge, where it's a crowded data space, you need an independent national statistical agency with the legal, you know, structure, the trust that we talked about, the privacy confidentiality protection. And we knew we could and needed to step up our game. So we've been modernizing for, now, of course, none of us predicted what happened in the pandemic, but we were already experimenting. And part of that modernization is a shift in culture, which says, you know, how can we do things differently? How can we do them in partnership? How can we do them looking responsibly using new data sources? How can we increase the literacy and numeracy skills of Canadians? And how can we do that with a culture, with the tool sets to equip our staff to be able to do all this? All I can say is thank goodness we had already started that journey, because there is no way that we would have been able to continue over the course of this last year and a bit had we not made those shifts and investments in being able to work remotely, being able, you know, in a secure way, in being able to tap into those resources. So we had one simple philosophy when we started this pandemic, which is how can we be helpful? And we went out and we yelled it from every rooftop. How can we be helpful? Where is it that data can help? And where is it that our expertise can help? And so the kind of partnerships that we were able to bring to bear, chambers of commerce stepped up. We did crowdsourcing with Canadians. 500,000 Canadians responded to one crowdsourcing survey, for example. So this would not happen if it wasn't for, you know, the partnership and the support for this institution. You know, you look at the work that we've just done well over 1 million contact tracing calls in helping provinces and regional health authorities right across this country, you know, looking at excess, you know, cases that they're doing. The kind of repositories that we're helping manage with our health partners to make sure that PPEs are present and available. So we have put out flash estimates for what's going on almost in real time in terms of GDP, whether it's trade, you know, all the different economic surveys that we're doing. So we literally said, how can we help? And Canadians responded. So whether it's chambers of commerce, whether it's, you know, our policy colleagues across the system, whether it's the city of Vancouver and the mayor, they're saying, look, I need data, you know, and we have worked with, you name it, every organization out there to say, how can we help? And we've done over 100 analytic papers, you name it, on how students have fared to mental health and how things are shifting to excess mortality to, you know, so this is a culture within Statistics Canada that said we can do it, and we can do it in partnership, and we can do it in responsible ways by innovating. And that's what we've done over this past year. So just have a look at the dashboards, have a look at the kind of material that we put on. And I think all of that, frankly, will continue. That's the new Statistics Canada. So this is not a one-off. We're not going to stop partnering. We're not going to stop doing things, because what it's told us is that Canadians value us, and they value what we bring, and they want to see more of it. And they want us to continue in responsible ways to serve them. That's what we're going to do.
I can just speak to that. I'm working on a project where we're close to finishing with a number of senators on Black entrepreneurship in Canada. And we reached out to your team, and they were super energetic, 2-3 meetings, and helped as much as they could. So, you know, kudos on doing that. And so speaking about diversity, the last discussion I wanted to have with you is in the recent budget, the federal government announced a major investment, $172 million over 5 years, to help the agency improve the way it captures data on race, gender, and sexual orientation, to name just a few of the areas. In my conversations, personal conversations with folks at StatsCan, they even admitted that up till now you've had a hard time, right, collecting data and you know, looking at issues through a gendered or racialized lens. So I guess how has the agency changed its tools to understand the impact of gender, race, and sexual orientation? And how do you see that money being used to help us better understand these different perspectives of life in Canada?
You know, so this story goes back quite a while, right? I mean, we had an initial sort of thinking in this country that, you know, these types of information should not be collected, right? And that has shifted. And I think overall, you know, Canadians are far more accepting of us collecting that kind of disaggregation. And so, you know, I think that shift has to be recognized, because without it, I mean, it comes back to that trust factor. Mm-hmm. You know, without that shift, I mean, we can ask the questions all we like, but if people say, not going to give it to you, it doesn't really matter. So the ability to collect that information at that detail is not something new. We have good standards. We know, you know, how to collect that information. So the first is, you know, Canadians have to accept that they're going to share that information with us. And that's what we're going to do, right? We're going to collect that kind of detail from Canadians on our surveys, on our existing surveys. So we're going to expand that to our economic surveys. We're going to expand that to our social surveys, whether it's, you know, the health surveys, our general surveys. We already did that on the labor force survey. So we're already starting to get, you know, more disaggregation, and we're going to do more of it, as you mentioned. And it's going to depend upon Canadians understanding and recognizing the value of that disaggregation. The second area that I think is we have to tap into is the existing data sources that are already there. As you mentioned, you know, there's a real push, right? When you talk to Black North, or when you talk to, you know, Black Chamber, or when you talk to, you know, entrepreneurs, and I'm using that as just one example. You can, you know, we can do that with the Indigenous groups. We can do that with so many other areas. You know, it has to be done in a team. It has to be done in a, I always say data is a team sport. So there is so much information and initiatives now that are underway to collect this information. We need to make sure that we're collecting them on a consistent basis, because if everybody picks their own definition and their own kind of way of doing things, well, it's going to make it really hard to make any sense of it. We're going to be arguing about how you collected it and why it's so different. And that's why you can't put any, you know, not to mention that you can't start to now link it in responsible ways to get at, you know, what does this mean? So, you know, what does it mean for housing? What does it mean for justice? What does it mean for education? What does it mean for, you know, so many of these other factors that we're talking about? Because that's what the pandemic has shown us, right? The pandemic has had a disproportionate impact in, you know, geographical areas, in communities, and the type of industries that people work. And so it's the interrelationships between these. So I think standards and using Statistics Canada's, you know, 100-year history of setting standard is going to be really important, because we have to agree on a common set of rules by which we collect this information. So even if Canadians accept and say, okay, I'm willing to give it, you have to ask the questions in a way that are meaningful and comparable. And then thirdly is the access, right? The access to these types of data by a trusted source like Statistics Canada, with the legal protections that are in place, is really what's going to make sense out of these things. And of course, we have to then do our share to making sure that, you know, from microdata that's available in, you know, academic research and research, whether it's policymakers, whether it's yourself, for example, mm-hmm. now have access to these types of data with the privacy and confidentiality protections in place so that we can make sense of it and say, aha, I think we need to go, you know, in this direction as opposed to this direction. And it's going to be really even more crucial because as we start to spend precious resources, we are going to need to know that every single dollar is having the impact that it was intended and that we're aware of the unintended consequences that it can have as well. Because again, this pandemic has shown us that, you know, not knowing can actually hurt us. So knowing it quicker allows us to act better. And data by itself, as I've always said, you know, is not going to do it. I think there's going to be we're going to have the will, the right governance, the right system in place to make sure that we're making good decisions, you know, based on information that you cannot refute at that point.
Yeah. And just to your point about, you know, the authority that Statistics Canada brings to this and the due diligence you do in designing studies, I always say when I'm writing a questionnaire or somebody's, you know, we're working together on something, I always say, let's check if Stats Canada's asked this question and just use their question because we know that it's been tested, as you just said, even with the census as an example. So, oh, that's great. Last question for you. I didn't prep this one, but I realized that a lot of students of mine and others listen to this podcast and I can't help but get excited about, you know, where you're leading Stats Canada and the kind of, I think, place it is to work. Make a pitch. Why work at Stats Canada? Why consider a career working for the National Statistics Agency?
You know, people want to make a difference. Honestly, they want to know that the work that they do is in a very meaningful way impacting Canadians. It is that purpose that is the singular drive. And, you know, we don't have to try very hard. People, you know, Canadians see it. I mean, youth see it. The students see it. They're coming up with better skills to deal with data. You know, data science, which is a domain language, statistics, mathematics. So all these skills are coming together, and Statistics Canada has it all. We have, you know, world leading infrastructure. We have the, you know, the expertise. We're sitting at pretty well every table in the world that's defining standards and pushing them. This is what StatsCan offers. It is to be able to, you know, quickly leverage that expertise and that draw and that desire to make a difference. And you hit the ground running when you come to Statistics Canada. And that's why we have people that come and frankly never leave. This is the place they want to come and they want to stay. They make careers. And I think they see that difference that they're making in society. And they know that data is shaping us to be better.
Well, and excuse the, it's not pejorative, but when people hear the terms chief statistician, they rarely think of great communicator, but you know, Anil, I've gotten to know you a little bit over the last few years. You are an excellent communicator. And it sounds like you're doing some pretty great things with your team at Stats Canada. So again, thank you for taking the time to chat with me today. Good luck finishing off what you started a few weeks ago or a few days ago on the census. And can't wait to see what you all do next.
Listen, I owe it to the literally thousands of colleagues at Statistics Canada. We're one big family, believe it or not. The values that we exercise of caring for each other, being curious, always learning, we stick up for each other, and it's a very diverse organization. I honestly couldn't think of a better organization with more dedicated colleagues. So the thank you is back to them. Thank you, David, for this opportunity to, you know, share a few thoughts with your listeners, and thank you for the work that you do, because it is an ecosystem and we are partners within it. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Have a good day.
Take care.